So we are reading from the sixth canto, second chapter, text 44, canto 6, capítulo 2, texto 44. Sakang vihayasa vipro mahapurusha kinkarahai vaivang vimanam aruya yayao yatra shriya patehi sakam vihayasa viproho mahapurusha kinkarahai Haimam vimanam haruya Yayau yatra shriyapataki Sakam along Vihayasa by the path in the sky or the airways Vipraha, the Brahmana Ajamil. Mahapurusha Kinkarahai. With the order carriers of Lord Vishnu. Haimam, made of gold. Vimanam, an airplane. Aruya, boarding. Yayao went. Yatra, where? Shriyaha, patehi. Lord Vishnu, the husband of the goddess of fortune. So translation, accompanied by the order carriers of Lord Vishnu, Ajamil boarded an airplane made of gold. Passing through the airways, he went directly to the abode of Lord Vishnu, the husband of the goddess of fortune. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada. For many years, material scientists have tried to go to the moon, but they are still unable to go there. However, the spiritual airplanes from the spiritual planets can take one back home, back to Godhead, in a second. The speed of such a spiritual plane can only be imagined. Spirit is finer than the mind, and everyone has experience of how swiftly the mind travels from one place to another. Therefore, one can imagine the swiftness of the spiritual form by comparing it to the speed of the mind. In less than even a moment, a perfect devotee can return home, back to Godhead, immediately after giving up his material body. So, Sakam vihayasya vipro mahapurusha kinkarahai haimam vimanam haruya yau yatra shriya patahi. So, Om Gana Timiranda Shaganjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Miditam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. So, of course, we are all waiting for that moment when we can go back to home, back to Godhead. Of course, that moment may come after a long period of time, as Krishna says, Bohunam Janmanamante. Ganavanmam Prapajite Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudurlaba. That after many, many births and deaths. So, we may have to wait a long time. However, there's this other process, apart from leaving the body. Actually, when I was a new devotee, I would pray to Krishna to kill me every day. I would go to sleep at night, and I would say, my dear Lord, please kill me tonight so I can go back to Godhead. I was very anxious to go back to Godhead with a desire for liberation. Actually, it's the opposite of something in English we call the Lord's Prayer. I I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. Anyone's heard that prayer before? It's a Christian prayer. Anyway, in case you haven't heard it. So I was praying the Lord my soul, my body to kill, so I would go back to home, back to God. Fortunately, he didn't kill me. He didn't respond to that particular prayer. Because I was very anxious to get out of the material world. But there's another way we can get out of the material world without leaving the body. That's called technically Jivan Mukta. Jivan Mukta means you're here, but you're also liberated. And while you're here and liberated, you can also be in the spiritual world, which is quite interesting. Prabhupada said that a pure devotee can be in more than one place at one time. It's not like the yoga expansions. You know, the yoga expansions, I think it's 9 times or something like that. The yogi can be in 9 places at the same time, but he's always doing the same things, like a television expansion. Like if you watch television, which you probably should not, unless you're in Maya, so then you'll see that's the same. If you've ever gone into a shop that sells televisions, if they still have televisions, I don't know, then you'll see that all the screens that are tuned to the same channel have the same image on it. That's a television expansion. But a pure devotee can actually be doing 2 different things in 2 different places, or more than 2 different places. And even in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, we find that Gopa Kumar is encountering Narada Muni in different spiritual planets, and even material planets. And Narada Muni is doing something different in each place. And actually, that's sort of opulence of a pure devotee. But in any case, as far as we are concerned, we can be Jivan Mukta in this lifetime. In other words, absorbed in our relationship with Krishna as we advance in devotional service. And that absorption in the relationship with Krishna is real. It is not something that is artificial or imaginary. For example, we have the story of Srinivas Acharya. It's a very interesting story. Srinivas Acharya, of course, great pure devotee of the Lord. And Srinivas Acharya one time was in his home. His wife was there too. Actually, there's many great pure devotees who are married. We were talking to a devotee yesterday. He was saying, I want to remain brahmachari forever. I said, well, even householders can be pure devotees. And he said, really? I didn't know that. No, I was just... And like Bhaktivinoda Thakur and so many nice devotees. Pure devotees. And Srinivas Acharya was married. Anyway, so he was absorbed in his relationship with Krishna, because as one advances, of course he's a pure devotee, one can understand one's sarupa, that means one's original form. That's, of course, that occurs later on, don't worry about it. That occurs when one is doing Raganuga Bhakti, first of all, and then one begins to cultivate that, and eventually Bhava Bhakti, and eventually Prema Bhakti. So anyway, so he was absorbed in meditation on a particular pastime in Braj, in Vrindavan. Even though he wasn't in Braj, he was in Bengal. So in that absorption, he was looking for something that Radharani had left or lost. And it was in the river. So he was looking, and he wasn't finding it. So it took a long time. He still didn't find it. So for several days, he was just sitting there in what we would call samadhi. Actually, a devotee can actually have samadhi. Whereas a non-devotee, how can they have samadhi? How can they be absorbed? Maybe in their senses, but not in Krishna. You can't be absorbed in nothing. You can't be absorbed in negation, you could be absorbed in something positive. So he was sitting there absorbed in that particular pastime. Really, the pastime was taking place simultaneously to the existence in this world. And after a few days, or actually after probably one day, his wife started to get really worried. She was thinking, oh my God, my husband hasn't eaten, he hasn't drank, He hasn't done anything. Of course, his breathing was going on. I mean, obviously, you'd be worried if the person you were living with hadn't moved for 3 days. Of course, there's an interesting story about the Mayavadis. There was one Mayavadi guru who hadn't moved for 3 days. He was dead. And and then his disciples thought he was just in absorption, samadhi. They thought, wow, Guru Maharaj is just so advanced. But when the body started to smell bad, then they understood he was dead. So, but in this case, in Srinivasacharya, he was alive. And he was meditating. And so his wife got really worried. You know, what am I going to do with my husband? So she called for one of his disciples, who also happened to be a great pure devotee, Ramchandra Kaviraj. And he asked the disciple, what can you do about your Guru Maharaj? I'm very worried. And so normally, you know, if someone was sitting there and we were worried about it, we'd just go and shake him. Hey, wake up! Wake up, Guru Maharaj. But that would have been offensive because he was meditating. And so therefore, this disciple, he had a perfect strategy. He sat down next to his spiritual master and went into the same pastime. That's pretty interesting, isn't it? So if you're a pure devotee, you can do that. Can anyone here do that? No? Nobody can do it. Too bad. So you just have to be content with enjoying your senses. So anyway, so we entered into the same pastimes. They found whatever Radharani had lost, an anklet, ankle bells, and they gave it back to Srimati Radharani, and they came out of the meditation together, and they embraced each other and started crying. So it was real. Other times, Srinivasacharya entered into the internal meditation, and he would bring things back from the spiritual world. That's pretty good, isn't it? I mean, bringing things back. He would, like, he'd have a garland, and he would come out, and then there'd be the garland from the spiritual world. Anyway, of course, we should not imitate that. But that's really what we can focus on obtaining eventually by the process of preaching Krishna consciousness. So, anyway, that's Jivan Mukta. You don't have to worry about leaving your body. So as far as leaving the body is concerned, of course the yogis, especially the kundalini yogis, they worry about which hole they're going to leave the body from. Navadware pure dehi. This body has 9 holes. And you can leave the body through any of those holes. Of course, those in the mode of ignorance, like rock and roll stars. Rock and roll, punk, whatever. What other type of music do you have here? What? Folk? No, folk is nice music. But they usually leave the body through the lower apertures in the body. That's why you hear about all these rock and roll stars or music stars. And they're taking intoxication. And it happens to be that they leave their body while they're in the bathroom. Usually. Like there was one, anyway, I don't know if he's mentioned his name, Elvis Presley, he left in such a way like that. So that's very inauspicious. Very inauspicious. Whereas devotees, they leave through the mouth usually. They're not concerned to go through the Brahmarandra. The yogis, they try to go through the Brahmarandra. Brahmarandra is like in the top of the skull. Very soft spot. When you were a kid, it was very soft, and now it's hard as a rock. So, so the devotees, they leave through the mouth. And I've been with many devotees that they left their bodies. And what happens is, at the time of leaving their bodies, they just open their mouth and the soul comes out. You can actually perceive the presence of the soul. I was with one of my godbrothers, Gorgo Vindamaraj, in Sridhar Mayapur. It was during the GBC meetings. That's enough to get you to leave your body. You know, it's intense. You know, management for, you know, people think, oh, you're GBC, it's so enjoyable, you get to be the boss. But actually, it's 14 days of 8 hours a day of meetings, which no corporation in the world does. It's called cruel and unusual punishment, meant to detach you from this material world. So you no longer want to take birth. Actually, it's one of... yeah, why would you want to take birth after that? You know, just get me the hell out of here. So anyway, so it was during the GBC meetings, and I was staying, like, in the next floor close to Gorgo Ben Namaraj. And what happened is that he was having trouble breathing. The devotees were with him. Actually, it was an ecstatic symptom. He left due to ecstatic symptoms. The devotees were asking him questions about the separation that one feels, or Lord Chaitanya felt, and the gopis feel from Krishna and Vrindavan, and also Lord Chaitanya feels in Jagannath Puri. Because Jagannath Puri is an abode of separation. Hmm. Especially during the Ratha Yatra, which represents when Krishna met the gopis in Kurukshetra. And the gopis were bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan, or attempting to drag Krishna back to Vrindavan. So, anyway, so Gaur Govinda Maharaj was asked, but actually it was two ladies who were asking him a question about separation. And he went into such an ecstatic mood that he was having trouble breathing. And the devotees, somehow they ran to my room and said, Gaur Govinda Maharaj is getting ready to leave his body. And so immediately, obviously, I just ran down and went into the room, and the devotees were holding a picture of his deities in front of him. Some of you may have heard this story before, but holding a picture of his deities in front of him, and they were massaging his chest, too, at the same time, and chanting loudly the holy name. And he opened his mouth, and the soul came out and went back to Godhead. It's actually very glorious to see the departure of a Vaishnava like that. So, you know, fortunately, I've been at the departure of several Vaishnavas from this material world, and it's always like that. They always open up their mouths, the soul comes out, goes back to home, back to Godhead. Very auspicious. And, of course, I didn't see the airplane. You know, I didn't, so I don't have spiritual vision. But at least I saw the soul come out and go back to Godhead. So, as far as airplanes are concerned, there's another point. Don't worry, eventually I'll get to the moon comment that probably makes this purport. It's not that I'm trying to avoid the controversy, but I'm going to get to it. So as far as the airplanes are concerned, one time I was with Prabhupada in Dallas, Texas, and we arranged a meeting in the VIP room of the airport. And so Srila Prabhupada arrived, and one of the first things Prabhupada said that, you know, I could have come here through different means. I could have come here through mantra, traveling on mantra, you know, because a devotee naturally has all mystic powers. Or I could have come here, Prabhupada even said, by magic carpet. You know, that's something out of the Arabian Nights. Anyone's heard that story before? 1001 Arabian Nights, Scheherazade. Some of you may have heard that story. So I could have come here. I won't tell the Scheherazade story, don't worry. That's a romantic story, actually. Not for the brahmacharis to hear. So it could have come by magic carpet, or actually I came by this airplane. And so the reporters, the first thing they asked Prabhupada was, why did you come by airplane? I mean, why didn't you come by mantra? Or by magic carpet? And Prabhupada said, to be one with you. In other words, so you would relate to me. And actually, that happened to be the advertising slogan or motto of the airline that Prabhupada was flying. It was called American Airlines. And the motto was, become one with us, fly with us. So Prabhupada said, to become one with you, that's why I chose to come in that particular way. That's very interesting. Prabhupada elsewhere talked about different types of airplanes. There's one called the Akasha Patana. You know what that means? Akasha. Akasha means like the subtle thing, you know, the Akash. Just like sometimes you hear about the subtle body or subtle body traveling. So that means the speed of the mind. Basically, it means the speed of the mind. And that's very interesting. And there's another one called Kapotavayu. Jai Shishi Panchatattva. And that can mean two things. Kapotavayu means like a spaceship or an airplane. It means, or you pronounce it differently, Kapotavayu means by pigeon. You read that? Prabhupada said that you can train these birds. I mean, obviously, it's not like the pigeons you have out here. Prabhupada would sometimes criticize pigeons because they would put statues of people outside and the pigeons would simply pass stool on them. Anyway, it's not like these little pigeons you got here in the park, in Tivoli Park. But these are big pigeons, you know, big birds. And he probably said you could travel that way. So there's different ways. And, of course, the Brahma Sangita says if you travel at the speed of the mind for millions of years, you'll never reach the end of this material creation. And then, of course, the scientists talk about how there's the speed of light, and that's the ultimate speed, right? That's in miles per second, that's 186,000 miles per second. It's about 260 kilometers a second. Pretty fast, isn't it? But even at that speed of light, it takes like several minutes for light to go from the sun to here, isn't it? What are the exact minutes? I forget right now. That's what I remember, 8 minutes. It takes 8 minutes. So even going at the speed of light, you know, it takes a long time to get someplace. Or at the speed of mind. And then speed of mind is so instantaneous, you can just think of something and you're there. Just like I can just think of Govardhan and I'm there. Boom. Pretty fast. Faster than the speed of light. So, obviously, you can't go back to the Godhead traveling at the speed of the mind or the speed of light like that. So this spiritual plane takes one back to Godhead at the spiritual speed. Now, the other point here, which you were all waiting to hear about, was about the moon. So Prabhupada said, for many years, material scientists have tried to go to the moon, but they are still unable to go there. So, if you speak about that publicly, you know, people may criticize us. So, let me explain exactly what Prabhupada is talking about. Elsewhere, Prabhupada talks about the distance between the Earth, the Sun, and the Moon, right? Now, Prabhupada quotes the material scientists understanding the distance, which is 93 million miles. Am I right about that? Material scientists say the sun is 93 million miles away. Has anyone measured it? No. But it's Prabhupada said that. And actually the Surya Siddhanta says the same thing. Surya Siddhanta is the Vedic literature that deals with the Surya, of course, means sun, and all the planets and everything like that. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was expert. And he published a translation and commentary of the Surya Siddhanta. Cosmology. Yeah, it's cosmology. That's one reason why he got the name Siddhanta Saraswati, from publication of that. So, in the Surya Siddhanta, it also says it's about 93 million miles away, which is interesting because the Surya Siddhanta is actually millions of years old. And they were able to calculate that. So Prabhupada, at one point, said it would be impossible to go to the moon because the sun is closer. Now, that's an interesting statement. But Prabhupada was understanding the description that see if I get this right, that the moon is 1,600,000 miles above the sun. Try to follow what I'm saying. Which is true. Because there's this thing called the ecliptic. I'm getting a little scientific here. Okay. So, remember that word and you can impress all your friends today. You know, the ecliptic is basically the, let's say, the path that the sun appears to follow as, because we know the Earth rotates around the sun, and also you can say the sun rotates around the Earth. Either it's just relative motion. You understand? So let's say the sun rotates around the earth, which we experience, because it's just a different perspective of how we see days and nights, right? Obviously. You can either see one way or the other, but it doesn't matter because there's no static frame of reference. Hope I'm not being too technical. Static. Static means not ecstatic or the opposite of ecstatic. Static means something that stands still. Like when you're in space, there's no frame of reference. Like if I can, by that I mean, here's this table, and my hand is moving in relationship to the table. I could say my hand is moving at 1 kilometer an hour in relationship to the table. Right? So, because there's a frame of reference. But when you don't have anything to relate the movement of the hand to, you can't really say whether it's moving this way or that way or this way or that way, because there's nothing to relate it to. So when you're talking about the rising of the sun in the morning, the setting of the sun in the evening, that can be taken in two ways. One is that the sun is going around the earth, or that the earth is going around the sun. Or the earth is turning, sorry. The earth is turning on its axis. You understand? You understand the logic. So the ecliptic is the plane. Not an airplane. Sorry about that. But a plane, I got to explain everything here. So let me explain what a plane is. A plane is a flat surface. You understand? And so if you have something going around in a circle, it defines a flat surface, right? Does everybody understand that? Going around a circle. Let's see, the tip of the finger, not the whole finger, goes around here in a circle, and that's a flat plane right there. So that's called the ecliptic. On the board? Well, that right now. This is not a science class. I don't want to get too far into it. So anyway, I think people can picture what it is. It's an ecliptic where the sun goes around the earth. And so really the Surya Siddhanta describes that the moon is on the average, because it's an average because the moon keeps moving too. The moon is on the average 1,600,000 miles above that plane of the ecliptic. So that's why Prabhupada said the moon is 1,600,000 miles further away. So that, and Prabhupada, anyway, so Prabhupada was making that statement insofar as the inability of people to go to the moon. Now, other times Prabhupada made the statement that if they went to the moon, they were put in a section of the moon that was just a desert. Like you have deserts here, not in Slovenia, no deserts. But in Africa, there's deserts. In Saudi Arabia, it's a big desert. That's why originally in the Middle East, all they could eat was fish. In many places. Because there were ponds or there were rivers, but the rest was desert. So another time Prabhupada said that, and another time Prabhupada said even if they went to the moon, they wouldn't be able to see the residents of the moon because the residents of the moon were more subtle. It's a heavenly planet. It's a heavenly planet. And we do know that there are entities on the moon. How do we know that? Have we gone there? We know that because it says, as Prabhupada says, quoting from the Vedic Siddhanta, Sarvagata, there are living entities everywhere. The whole purpose of this material creation is to provide a place for living entities to be rectified. So Krishna would not arrange anywhere that was just like sitting there without any purpose at all, right? I mean, Krishna is an expert designer. Just like if you look at the body, everything has a purpose. It's not purposeless. Every part of the body, every part of an automobile has a purpose, even if it's just a design to impress the people who are going to buy it. But there's a purpose to everything when you have design. So that's the real point, that everything has a purpose. There's living entities everywhere. And God has designed everything. So Prabhupada's attack to the materialist understanding of things, whether it's cosmology or whatever, was basically to hurt our faith in modern, mundane, atheistic science. And basically, Prabhupada was very enthusiastic to attack the atheist, especially the theory of evolution. I mean, that's really what it gets down to. That, you know, our whole point is that, you know, aham sarvasya prabhu matak sarvam pravartite iti matva bhajantiva, that everything comes from Krishna. Right? Om Purnamidam. That the perfect, supreme personality of God is perfect and complete. Everything happens under Krishna's will. Krishna's designed everything. Not that everything came about by chance. And that was Prabhupada's intention. Try to understand that. And just like I was, I was thinking about evolution the other day, and I saw some interesting video that sort of proved that evolution did not occur, or like mundane evolution. And it was about a chicken. Everybody's heard of chicken? Pollo? And it was about a chicken's egg. So, it's such an interesting video. I don't know if anyone saw this, but it showed that when a chicken lays an egg, there's an embryo inside the egg, if it's a fertilized egg. Not the eggs that they serve you. Not that you serve you, but anyway. The eggs you buy in the store. There's usually... I mean, that's why it's so hellish to eat an egg. You know, it's like eating an unfertilized whatever. Yuck! Like pus. Like Prabhupada said, Prabhupada said that people like to eat lobsters, they're eating pus. So it's just like eating disgusting bodily fluids. Yuck! I mean, who would want to eat bodily fluids, right? It's like if someone sneezes. Are you going to just pick it up and drink it? So anyway, getting back to the point of evolution. I just thought I'd mention that because eggs are pretty disgusting. So here's a little embryo of a chicken. So let's compare it to an embryo of a human being. And a human being's embryo gets air through the umbilical cord, right? Everybody knows what that is? You know, it's attached to the mother. Mother is breathing. And the oxygen goes into her blood, and the blood goes through the umbilical cord. You know what I'm saying? Very nice. Perfect arrangements. But the chicken's inside an egg. And the egg, basically, it's solid. Anyone here seen a chicken egg? No. You've all been vegetarian since your birth, so... So it's solid, you know, when you crack it, you know. In Easter, they have Easter eggs here? Or demoniac, isn't it? They boil the egg, and they color it, right? Disgusting. So it's solid. You know it's a solid thing. So where is the poor chicken embryo getting his or her air from? It's a mystery, isn't it? Because there's no, you know, there's no mother out there breathing. It's not even in the mother. Actually, a chicken, all the birds are called dwija, which means a Brahmin. Because they're twice born. Did you know that? A Brahmin's called Dwija because he's twice born. You know, first is the material birth, the second is the initiation of the spiritual master. A bird is called Dwija because it's two births. The mother lays the egg, and then sometime after the egg hatches. So this poor chicken has no air. The shell is there. So it turns out that Krishna has designed the shell with these incredibly small, microscopic, you know, practically... tiny, you can't even see them. Holes in it. And the chicken is getting the air because it has some blood vessels and everything inside the yolk. and it's getting through the holes in the... Can you imagine that? I mean, how can you say that that came about by chance? It's like sometimes they talk about which came first, the chicken or the egg. Because how can you have a chicken without an egg, and how can you have an egg without a chicken? It doesn't make sense. So so everything had to happen simultaneously. Someone had to design the holes in the egg, right? Little tiny holes. And the way the chicken was breathing, completely different than us. And then the chicken has to poke his own way out. It was completely different than a human being. You understand? A human being doesn't poke his way out of the mother's womb. Anyone who's seen a birth, he doesn't go, all right, time to get out. But the chicken goes, pow, 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 pokes his way out. And so you've got all these differences and incredible amount of complexity in the design of the egg or the design of one cell. And according to my godbrother, Sataputra Prabhu, who in his nice book, Mechanistic and Non-Mechanistic Science, you read the book? No? Mechanistic and Non-Mechanistic Science. I can send you a copy. It's not available anymore, but I have it on the computer. That basically he was an expert in probability theory. You know, probability theory means what's the chance of something happening. So he determined that if you ever use something called scientific notation, it was like 10 to the minus quadrillion billion, whatever it is. In other words, impossible that even one cell or even one, let's say, proto-life or beginning of life could occur by chance. And so what to speak of this incredible complexity? So this is what Prabhupada is, that's the point I'm making, this is what Prabhupada is actually dealing with. He's trying to dissuade us from our faith in modern science that one day you will live forever because they will replace every part of your body. Your brain, your heart, and they'll upload you into a computer. So if I want to talk to you, I just open up the computer. That's actually good, because you can just put someone, if you don't want to talk to them, you just put them to sleep. Unplug them. Yeah, so we all have some faith. But the Surya Siddhanta is really precise in its measurements. I mean, all the measurements which were analyzed by my godbrother Sataputra actually were in the ballpark or similar to the measurements that the scientists are getting today. So we should have faith in the Vedic literatures and not so much faith in the modern science, especially the modern scientific conclusions. And I think that's the point that Prabhupada is making here. And as far as we went to the moon or not, they may have gone to a place, a similar location, but because they didn't have the proper body, that's another way Prabhupada explained it. They didn't have the proper body to enter into or perceive the inhabitants there. Prabhupada sometimes gave the example, you can go into the ocean, but because you don't have the proper body, like a fish with the gills, you can't really associate, you can't really stay there. The same thing with the moon. And of course, nowadays they're thinking of establishing a base on Mars, right? What's the use? Because one of their philosophical or practical points is the human beings are destroying the planet now, Earth. So we should find another planet to destroy so we can continue to exist. But as far as what we're doing to the planet now, the planet is revolting against us. We're like a bacteria. You understand? Human beings right now. Because we're not functioning appropriately in accordance with ecology, in accordance with Krishna consciousness. So we're like a burden on the earth. Okay, any questions or comments about any of these points? Yes. Yep. Microphone.
If I remember correctly, Prabhupada in one place says that some witches were flying on sticks or brooms.
Yeah, khichdi. It's called khichdi, not khichri, which you eat. Yeah, I've seen it.
I find it interesting.
No, I've seen them. Just like I lived for several years in Venezuela, and every year they would have a witch convention there. Just like you have conventions of whatever, you know, different businesses have conventions. So the devotees would go to the witch conventions to preach to them. Because devotees are very compassionate, you know, padyatra at the witch convention. And there was one witch. I mean, this is a true story. There was one witch. There was a devotee walking, his bead bag. The witch went up to try to get to the devotee and touched the bead bag, and she flew back in the air like, meters? About 30 meters in the air. Because the bead bag had such potency, she couldn't touch the bead bag. I could tell you so many stories like that. So anyway, we've seen, and there are ghosts too. One of the places in my GBC zone is New Orleans, where everyone's taking intoxication, prostitution, all these four regulated principles are being broken on a daily basis by everyone, except for the devotees. And you can see the ghosts up there. So there's ghosts, witches, yes, true. So the witches can fly by brooms, yeah. Or not actually brooms, uprooted trees. It's not really brooms that they go to the store. they go to the store and they go to the witch store and they buy, or the store here, you know, you have some supermarket and they say, can I have a broom? I need to fly somewhere. So they would take uprooted trees, yes.
I was wondering, referring to the verse, Ajamila, he got purified.
Yeah.
And is there connection when devotee becomes purified? People he hurt, Ajamila hurt many people. Do they get the benefit automatically?
Yeah. I mean, other
because
people who preach to
him. He gets purified of offense and karma.
Yeah.
And then, but the offenses and karma, they're connected with others. With others.
Oh, the others who are offensive or devotees?
No, the devotee was before it was devotee.
Yeah, the people who preach to him, yeah.
Even if there's no more contact in previous life.
That's right.
Still, they get the automatically benefit when devotee gets purified of karma and offense.
I mean, look at Dhruva Maharaj. Because Dhruva Maharaj got the instruction from his mother to take shelter of Krishna. When he went back to Godhead, guess who was following him in the next airplane? His mother. Actually, anyone associated with the devotee gets immense benefit. Even there's that story of Tukaram, whose wife was was not a devotee. And he said to his wife as he was going back to Godhead, you can get in the airplane too. So she had a free ride. Of course, she said no. She said, no, I just want to stay with my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren. And he said, okay. Hasta la vista. So, yes, everyone gets a benefit. Anyone who's if you go back to God, anyone who's helped you before gets a benefit.
What about those who may not help you, but you exploit it, or you hurt, or you owe them?
It depends who. I mean, are you speaking, let's say, Jamil's prostitute wife or something like that? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, but the Jamila's life was like that. He was hurting people, he was stealing from them, and so on.
I know, he got forgiven. Yeah, what happened with
them? The question, whether they get the benefit. Or not, or they're completely different.
Not really, you know.
They don't get a benefit.
I don't think they get benefit, you know, because they got someone who became a devotee before stole from them. I mean, that's a stretch of the imagination, that before I became a devotee, I killed so many people, and therefore becoming a devotee, it was good I killed those people because they get benefit. I have to stretch to the imagination. Or before I became a devotee, I ate so much meat, and therefore all the cows I ate, it's good I ate them, because they'll get the benefit. You know, it's a real stretch of the imagination. I don't think so. So, no, I mean, we should pray for them, yes. Then they get the benefit. That's true. Actually, if we pray for someone, then we can, by the wishes of a devotee, if you're actually a devotee, someone can get benefited, yeah. And I'm sure Ajamil, it's not mentioned here, but as a devotee, he had the natural quality of compassion and he was praying for people. So I'm sure he was praying for even his prostitute wife or whatever. Even his son, Narayan, you know. Pretty good name. Okay. Any other questions or comments before we end? Yes. Should come up. Do you need it? Are you loud enough without a mic? I think your husband will say that.
I was wondering, why do we have all this process as embryos that we go through looking like fish and having those things to breathe with, you know, like fishes all that stuff? Like, from the point of view of a designer, what's this? Because many people who are in favor of evolution give that as a argument. So what can we say as an answer?
Well, that's the efficiency of design. You know, if you have one pattern and you keep using it and building on it, that's pretty intelligent. Instead of having to start something from scratch again. From scratch means from the beginning again. I mean, I would say that if I was going to design living entities, I would probably do it that way too. You know, you have your basic building blocks and you build on the building blocks like that. You know, why do something so different? It takes a lot more effort. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's one argument that they make. You know, if you have pictures of the embryo, you go through a fish stage. And you have a little tail there, and then, but then even they talk about vestigial organs. And that's a technical word. So you can learn something new today. Vestigial organs means like your appendix or something like that. They say these organs are part of our evolution. They have nothing to do with the functionality of the body. Well. As the scientists investigate or the doctors investigate more, the appendix does have something to do with the body. And what it does, it's part of the immune system. You know, so there are things, you know, you think it's just, hey, I got this organ, it doesn't do anything inside my body. Or like the tip of the spine, it's called the coccyx bone. They say, it doesn't do anything, it's just from when I was a monkey or when... I evolved from being a monkey. But every part of the body has some particular function. And each organ is so complex. You take the liver, for example. Hígado. The liver. It is so complex. You can't live without the liver. Just like my dear godbrother, Jai Patakamarsh, needs a new liver. And you know, can't live without it. And he's waiting for a transplant right now. We ask everyone to pray. But it's so complex what the liver does. And the scientists can't even understand one cell, what to speak of the whole liver. Isn't it? One cell in your body is more complex than all the cities of the world put together. And it happened by chance, huh? Yeah. Ljubljana happened by chance. New York happened by chance. It's just not, it's stupid. It's just stupid. It's like when I went to the university, they taught us about probability theory. They said if enough monkeys were typing enough times, the whole works of Shakespeare would come out from the monkeys. Anyone heard that example before? You know, enough monkeys on typewriters. But it's stupid because what monkey's going to sit there and type on a typewriter anyway? You have to keep feeding him bananas all day long. And even if he did it, it's not going to happen. You know, probability theory. And even, there is some probability works of Shakespeare would come out if enough monkeys or wherever were typing on typewriters. But the cell is infinitely much more complex. Isn't it? Infinitely much more complex. So... Anyway, so anyone who has any brains knows that there's design. Yeah, question.
life come from life.
Srila Prabhupada tiene una discusión con los discípulos de que los científicos no aceptan como el alma, la chispa espiritual.
Srila Prabhupada is discussing with some devotees discussion with scientists about the scientists, they don't accept the soul, the spirit.
Mi pregunta es, Maharaj está explicando un poquito lo de los huevos, las diferentes partes, cómo tiene vida eso, ¿no? De materia, pero...
So you're explaining all different parts of the body, but that has life, and it has a spirit that moves, that creates.
Yeah. I mean, the point is the real essential item is the soul. But even from a scientific background, even forgetting about talking about the soul, you can see that the design of everything did not happen by chance. That was the point I was making. And obviously, the scientists also talk about artificial intelligence. How they can give a computer consciousness. For example, I sometimes talk to my phone and it talks back as an artificial intelligence. You have to say, "Hey Google, what time is it?" And it says, "Time, it is now, 8:05 in the morning." I'm not going to do that. Actually, if I talk now, it'll start talking to me. But anyways, right in the middle class. But it has no consciousness. It's just programmed in a certain way. You can even program it to say, to say something like, "I'm feeling pain." Actually, I could do that right now with the phone and show you. But anyway, but it's no consciousness. There's no feeling. So, I think we have to end now because it's time for, not eggs, but it's time for prasadam. All glories of divine grace. Is divine grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ijai. Thank you all for joining us. We got devotees from all over. We are in Slovenia.